everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of True Crime All the Time. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Gibby Gibbs. What's going on today?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good. I'm doing good.
Good.
So we just want to make sure that everyone knows about our other podcast, True Crime All the Time Unsolved. You know, we've released a few episodes of that now. It's really doing well. We appreciate everybody coming over from this podcast. But if you haven't checked it out, definitely do that. Hey, folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime, and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. All right, Gibby, we have two new Patreon sponsors. So I want to give a big shout out to Lindsay and Gwen. Their patronage is very much appreciated. And listen, anyone can help support the show on Patreon. Just visit our website at truecrimeallthetime.com. to find out all of our information. And you know what? Please, if you like the show, the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth definitely goes a long way. And also, you know, go out to iTunes and give us a good rating. That definitely helps us continue to move up the charts. I know it's one of those things that a lot of people don't like to take the time to do. But, you know, if you're a big fan of the show and you want to help support us, that's one way. It doesn't cost a dime. Just go out there, give us a good review, and it really helps a lot. All right, Gibby, are you ready to talk about Leonard Lake and Charles Ng?
Sick, man.
I'm thinking these may be the two sickest individuals.
Pretty disturbing.
We've covered.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because we've covered some, you know, sick
bastards. It's appropriate for this episode number, so...
It is episode 13, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe I should have skipped that, like they do in
hotels. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too late now because I already said it. To start, I want to play a small clip of Leonard Lake. For those of you that don't know, he liked to film himself, and I think that's part of what makes this case pretty disturbing, and it's also a big part of what helped when it came time for the trial.
Right.
Right, so let's hear a little bit from Leonard Lake.
Good evening. It's a Sunday in October. 22nd, 23rd, something like that. Very close to my 38th birthday. And I'm starting this tape without script or without any real organization of what I want to say. But I do feel I need to explain. What I want is an off-the-shelf sex partner. I want to be able to use a woman whenever and however I want. And when I'm tired or bored or not interested, I simply want to put her away, lock her up in a little room, get her out of my sight, out of my life. Slave, there's no way around it. Primarily a sexual slave, but nonetheless a physical slave as well. And I believe that if I can construct a holding cell, a place where I can put such a woman, a facility that is so stark and so empty, so cold, so quiet, so totally removed from the world, that I can quickly condition a young woman to cooperate with me fully.
What you heard there is pretty disturbing, and that was some mashups of a bunch of different clips from some of the videotapes that they recovered. Yeah, I mean, obviously this guy's sick.
Yeah, he's definitely disturbed.
From the things that he's describing, and for sure, Gibby, he's got no respect for women whatsoever.
Zero.
That was plain to hear from the audio. But let's talk a little bit about Leonard Lake. You know, he was born in San Francisco, California, October 29th, 1945. His parents separated when he was about 6 years old, and that caused him and his siblings to have to go live with his maternal grandmother. By all accounts, he was actually a pretty bright child, but he had some weird obsessions that started at a really early age.
He did, yeah. I mean, he was kind of encouraged by his mom.
I think his mom and his grandma, it was very strange. He was obsessed with pornography.
Yeah. But I mean, they were encouraging him to take photographs of new girls, right?
Of his sisters, even.
Sister, cousins. Yeah. It was, and then, like you said, then his obsession turned into pornography. So, at such a young age.
It was even talked about that Lake extorted sexual favors from his sisters. I'm not sure what kind of extortion techniques he was using at such a young age, but he enjoyed killing small animals.
Right.
And I don't know if there's, like we talk about, there's not many of these sick killers that we've talked about that haven't had
something like that in their
background. Some of these weird perversions, whether it be... Now, this is the first one that I think we've had where somebody was into pornography at such a young age. I mean, this is a kid.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's getting sex favors from his sister to protect her from her and his older brother. I mean...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a strange makeup of a family.
But, you know, and I know it's kind of like a broken record. We talk about it on a lot of episodes. Right. But you got to delve into the childhood somewhat because you want to know at least what could have caused the wiring to go bad.
Yeah.
And here again, there is a bunch of stuff in Lake's childhood that definitely could have been the catalyst for what is to occur later.
Right.
So he attends high school. And then in 1964, Lake enlists in the Marine Corps. He's 19 years old. You know, he actually serves a couple of tours of duty in Vietnam, or Vietnam, depending on how you like to say it. I believe he was some kind of radar technician.
Radar operator.
Yeah, radar operator. But something important happens during this time period as well. Because this is when he's first diagnosed as with a schizoid personality disorder.
Right.
And I don't know, Gib, if you read this or not, but there was a little thing I read that said that mental illness ran in every generation of the Lake family.
Really?
So it didn't say it skipped a generation. It said every generation.
Right.
Again...
Well, I mean, he had 2 years of therapy when he was in the service. Clearly, it didn't help.
Yeah, I wanted to look up SPD or the schizoid personality disorder,
right?
Just to give the audience a little background on it. But it is a personality disorder. It's characterized by a lack of interest in social relationships, a tendency towards a solitary or sheltered lifestyle, secretiveness, emotional coldness, apathy. Affected individuals may simultaneously demonstrate a rich, elaborate, and exclusively internal fantasy world. Now, as we're going to see, that's Leonard Lake.
Absolutely it is.
Because the things that happen, he's into fantasy. He's...
Oh, yeah.
He's... You know, apathetic, especially towards women and... So I thought that was important that you kind of talk a little bit about this SPD.
And eventually it gets him discharged from the service, right?
Yeah, it's like, what causes his discharge.
Yeah. So, I mean,
and as you talked
71,
about
71, he gets out.
Like you talked about, he does go through psychotherapy.
Yeah, two years of it, you know.
Apparently either, you know, he was going through the motions or whatever it was, but it didn't.
But it got him out. I mean, and they don't, right? They don't really say the exact reason for the discharge. They just know it's mental related. So
after the discharge, he's back in regular as a civilian. At this point, he's in San Jose, California. He's attending San Jose State University, but only for one semester. So, I mean, he can't even finish basically one semester of college.
Yeah, doesn't keep his interest, I guess.
Yeah. You know, what I read was he was really obsessed with this San Francisco hippie lifestyle to the point that he settled in with this hippie commune in the early 70s. And he marries a girl, I think, from the commune in 75.
Yeah, they're all into that free love and some freaky sex stuff. But
this is 8 years, right? We're not talking, he wasn't there. He was in this commune probably longer than, or about as the same time that he served in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was a long time, eight years.
Yeah, probably longer. Yeah.
I think you were going to touch on something there about the freakiness.
I just think it's really, you know, even back in the free love days, right? I mean, it was weird for me, you know, because, you know, he got a real big high off of the fact that he loved filming bondage scenes. And it kind of goes back to, you know, what you talked about, kind of his condition. So, but he really liked filming those bonding scenes. But the weirder part was
did
for
you
me.
Say bonding?
Did I say bondage?
You said first. You said bondage. Then you just said bonding.
Yeah,
those are very two different terms. Things.
Let's go with bondage.
Yeah, it was definitely bondage, sadomasochism. Yeah. You know, it goes back to what we talked about. He does have something about pornography, and whether it's you call it an addiction, a sickness, but to the point where you know he starts making his wife star in these bondage pornographic movies.
Right. Sometimes with her, sometimes with other women where she's watching.
Yes. And I think that's what I read. It was after that the marriage kind of broke up.
Yeah.
She wasn't into all that, even though apparently for a while she was.
Maybe she wanted to try to appease him or something. But
about 8 years, he's living in this hippie commune. And this is in a place called Ukiah in Northern California.
Haven't been there.
It's shocking that you haven't been there.
You know, in 1980, Lake gets charged with grand theft. He rips off some building materials, I guess, sounds like a construction site. But he gets off easy. For whatever reason, he gets a year probation. So there's kind of basically a slap on the hand.
No, I mean, nothing. He didn't serve time, I don't even think.
Here's your probation. Don't do it again.
Pay a fine, maybe, or whatever. And so the next year, he actually gets married again.
You're going to try it out one more time, huh?
And this woman, Clara Balazs, I believe is how you pronounce her last name.
I believe that's right.
And he meets her at a Renaissance fair. And Gibby, you know, if there's one thing that I always say, don't marry a woman that you meet at a Renaissance fair.
That's right.
How many times have you heard me say that?
That's like rule number three, I think, or four.
Now, somebody out there met their partner at a Renaissance fair, and I'm going to get a nasty email. Yeah. But
my daughter loves Renaissance fairs. So.
I didn't say don't go to Renaissance fairs.
Right.
I said don't marry someone you meet at a Renaissance fair. It's a joke.
Well,
I don't want the nasty emails.
No, but the thing about this, right, is that he not only meets her there, but they live like that, right? They're wearing the medieval costumes and the horns from goats or something and use the horns as part of their costumes to be unicorns.
Sounds pretty freaky.
Yeah, I mean, they do some weird stuff. So, I mean, they got the medieval costumes and they got the unicorn stuff running around and they're really into it. They're really digging it, you know? And it's just, to me, it's that, what did you call it? That fantasy world that...
Part of the SPD, right?
Yeah, SPD. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
I think that's correct. One thing I didn't mention is that his wife's nickname was Cricket. And Cricket kind of even though they don't stay married very long. Leaves him, and she's starring in these porno movies too, I think, at one point.
Right. It's probably a must when you marry him that you have to do porno.
That's almost like part of the package.
Right, bondage.
But at some point, she gets tired of, you know, his crazy behavior. Like you said, I think he's getting into, at this point, this whole survivalist type. There was a lot of that I read about that. You know, he's stockpiling weapons.
Oh, yeah.
He's into this whole impending nuclear. And remember, this is Cold War, right? Early 80s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was around that time where you had that. You had, you know, that part of the country, and there was a big movement. There was a big movement. A lot of people would go to, they're buying land, and big groups of people would buy acreage together up in Montana. And they would buy legal arms, and there was a lot of stuff on the news back then where they would raid these ranches up in Montana. So you had it in parts of California, parts of Montana, probably all over the country. That so everybody was worried.
He was doing something similar. I think he was selling pot, drugs, he was buying and selling guns probably to, you know, kind of to make money. But, you know, Cricket is kind of, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but, you know, we played the small version of Leonard Lake from the, what becomes known as the M tape.
Right.
And Cricket is on some of the tapes as well. So I want to play just a little bit of her.
Let's see. We talked about underage performers, but I've seen some awfully cute-looking little 14, 16-year-olds that I envy, but I wouldn't mind watching them do something interesting.
I know that was a little hard to hear, but basically she's talking about underage girls.
Mm-hmm.
There was the theory that she helped lure some of the people that will come to talk about. So I don't know, on there, she didn't sound like she was what I mentioned as far as tired of Leonard and having to star. I mean, she sounded like she was more of a
participant, willing participant.
Yes. And that's something. I mean, we don't talk about her a lot in this,
right?
But ultimately she's granted immunity when everything goes down. And so there was a lot of talk on the internet, and I don't know how much you read about it, but that it was strange that she got it, because some of the stuff on these tapes,
pretty criminating, right?
Yeah, just like what you heard.
Yeah,
didn't make it sound like she was being forced to do some of these things that we're going to talk
right.
about.
So. And these tapes are all disturbing. You know, the M tapes or the Operation Miranda tapes, right?
I mean, right.
But they're definitely disturbing, especially, I mean, even though they were made back that
early
long
80s,
ago.
Right.
I mean, the quality of the videos and the tapes are fairly good.
Yeah, now that one, the audio wasn't as good on that one, but yeah, I mean, it must have had some decent equipment for the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we may talk about why that is.
All right, so it's around this time that Leonard Lake, he places this ad in this War Gamers magazine in 1981. I'm trying to think of any War Gamer magazine.
I never heard of that. But see, that could have been one of those, like, what was that real big one? Soldier of Fortune?
Yeah.
It could have been some kind of survivalist magazine that was not mainstream or something like that.
It could have been just a California thing too. I don't know. But so at this point, he places his ad. Well, he gets somebody answers that ad. And it is his future partner in crime, Charles Ng.
So that we got to talk about Ng, because he's the second player in this.
He's just as warped.
Yeah, in this duo. And Charles Ng was born in Hong Kong in 1961. He was actually the son of a wealthy Chinese executive. And, you know, as a child, though, Ng was disciplined and abused by his father pretty harshly, it said.
Yeah, and his dad even talks about that at trial, right? About how he beat his kid.
Yeah.
Trying to use that as a reason why his kid did what he did.
Yeah, Ng was described as a loner, was expelled from a bunch of different schools.
Well, he went to private school and was stealing from the kids there, you know? So,
yeah, I think...
Troubled.
I think, yeah, after he was arrested for shoplifting at around age 15, that's when his father sent him to what you were talking about, this boarding school. It was actually in England.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very long after he got there that he like you said, he was expelled for stealing from other students, and they shipped him back to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ng moves to the United States on some type of student visa in 1978, and he's actually studying biology at the College of Notre Dame, not the Notre Dame, but the College of Notre Dame in Belmont, California. And pretty much just like Leonard Lake, he lasts about one semester.
Yeah, very short-lived. So he tries the different school thing, doesn't work out. And then, you know, he gets in a little problem with some hit and run incident when he's in California. And, you know, at that point, his only answer is that he ends up joining the Marines, right, to try to get his life turned around. He's trying to give this a chance. This is in the around 79. But then he gets into trouble. Him and two other Marines are caught stealing about $11,000 worth of automatic weapons from a Marine arsenal in Hawaii. And he finds himself under arrest. And I'm thinking $11,000 worth of automatic weapons today, that would probably be one weapon.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But back then, I'm guessing that was an arsenal.
I don't really even know how much that was back then, because I have to imagine those are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But I guess it depends on what kind they're talking about.
Right. So he's under arrest, and of course, you know, they do a psychiatric evaluation.
Say that again.
Yeah, yeah. My throat got stuck there for a minute. So he does the evaluation, and it's during the evaluation he talks about assassinating certain people in California. So I mean, he's starting to show a little bit of what's the word there, Mike? Little psycho.
Is that the fantasy? I mean, I know what you're saying, because apparently he claimed that he had assassinated somebody.
Yeah. And that's where somehow he's able to escape the custody from them, and he flees. And then it kind of brings us up where we talked about, you know, he answers this ad. I know there's a few other things that you probably want to, you know, talk about him, but I just think it's, again, it's strange. And they have some similar paths, right, in the beginning.
Well, they do. I mean, obviously they both had probably less than, or let's just say, bad childhoods.
Right.
They gave college a chance. That didn't work.
Right.
They both were in the Marines. So they had a lot in common. Leonard Lake was like this raging racist. He did not like African Americans. He did not like Hispanic.
No, he didn't. He had an issue with all of them, but yet he meets this Charles Ng and
he's totally fine.
They're fine.
So they get along famously somehow.
And I don't know if that's a military thing because of that, or because of the underlying how sick these two are, that somehow they just hit it off that way. And I don't know what the ad said. You know, I wish I could see a copy of the ad that he answered to.
And, right? And maybe somebody out there has that information. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I couldn't either. I would love to know what the ad actually said and what drove him to answer that ad.
I just want to make sure I understand. He's deserted the Marines because he was facing probably some type of court-martial situation.
Right.
He makes his way back, because he's in Hawaii, right, when this happens. He makes his way back to California, and this is where he's hooked up with Leonard Lake.
Yep.
And this is like 1982, we'll say.
Right.
This is the point where I believe that the federal authorities come in and raid
Yeah, because they've been collecting legal art firearms.
Right. We know Leonard's been doing it for...
Yeah, he's been stockpiling right. them.
I don't know if Ng started when he got there or he was just kind of...
Kind of helping out and...
Just was there and all these weapons were already stockpiled. But, you know, the authorities come in, they seize a bunch of legal weapons, explosives. Again, somehow... this is a common theme for me that I don't understand. You know, people are able to, I don't want to say get away. So Leonard Lake is released on bond.
Right, about $6,000.
He jumps bail.
Yep.
And takes off. But this is a common theme where people are, you know, he's let off on probation. And now his bail's only $6,000. He's able to just...
And he runs post and flees and... Walk away. I think his second wife at that point's kind of pissed off.
Yeah.
And I know that... Somehow she divorces him without knowing where he's at, right? So
right.
There's a process through the courts that she can do that. But, you know, and we'll get to it later, but she remains friendly with him. But he's on the run.
Ng is...
Because he's a fugitive, right? And they catch him. He's denied bail.
You're talking about Ng?
Yeah. What did I say? Ng?
No, you just didn't say anything. I said
Ng. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So Ng is... He's a fugitive and he was denied bail.
He's actually returned to the Marines.
Yeah, and he has to negotiate some type of plea with them for what he did before he left. And then on top of that, he's got this firearms issue that he has to deal with them. So I believe they make some type of compromise on a sentence with the military police.
Yeah, I think it was 18 months that he did in Leavenworth, which is no joke.
That's some serious time.
Leavenworth is a...
That's, you know, labor, like...
Federal penitentiary.
Right.
But 18 months, and then he's paroled and dishonorably discharged.
That goes back to, why such a short period of time for what he did? But we have that all the time on these discussions.
Everything.
It doesn't matter what sentence you get. Very rarely do they ever do a fraction of it.
Yeah.
So
and then you see they keep doing something else and they get in trouble for that. And it's a small sentence. And then they just keep on until they do something that lands them on this show is basically, you know, how it seems to work. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. All right, Gib. So at this point, Ng is released from prison, from Leavenworth. And immediately he reaches out to contact Leonard Lake.
All right. So at this point, Mike, what we know is that Leonard Lake he's decided to move, and he's settled in on these about 2.5 acres of woodland property near Wilseyville, which is that Calaveras County, California?
Yeah, I think it's kind of somewhere like east of San Francisco.
Yeah.
To give some kind of reference.
And I guess, you know, he's at this property and he's kind of got the help of his neighbors, and they're building like a bunker next to the cabin that he's at. Pretty sturdy bunker at that. And they're stockpiling illegal weapons. So, I mean, he's kind of a repeat behavior there.
He's just going back to that.
Yeah. And I guess he's got some of this pretty nice stolen video equipment as well.
So Ng joins him.
Yes.
But there's something that we have to talk about that may have already happened, or that we believe already happened before Ng gets there.
Right.
And that's the fact that Lake has already committed a couple murders.
Yes.
He's killed his brother, Donald, and he's killed his best friend. His friend and what was his best man,
right,
at his wedding, whose name was Charles Gunner. And basically what I read was he was stealing their money, but he wanted Gunner's identity. And so he's already done that. Ng gets there. And then really it kind of just takes off from there, because over the next year, Lake and Ng become this pair. And this is where they start to indulge in this fantasy world, which right. we talked about, of rape, torture, and murder. So I think we have to talk about how they get caught and then kind of move backwards.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to go about it.
I think it works best that way.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, granted, they've already committed all these crimes.
Right.
And so we're fast forwarding up to June 2nd of 1985. And it's at this point that Ng is, we've already talked about his childhood. He's been caught stealing a bunch of times.
Yeah, it's a compulsive behavior.
He's like a kleptomaniac.
Exactly.
Right. So he goes into this hardware store or lumber place or some type of place, and he steals a vise.
Yeah.
I think they, you know, I don't know, 50, 60 bucks.
Yeah, something like that. 70, a lot 60, of money 70 back bucks. Then. Sure.
Although a vice is kind of usually pretty heavy. Seems like a weird thing to steal.
Exactly.
He steals it. He flees the scene. You know, at one point, Leonard Lake, he drives back to the store and he attempts to pay for this vice. You know, by then, the police were already there, right? Because they'd been called for the shoplifting. But Lake, you know, Lake's there now. Ng's gone. He's already taken off. And what I had was that, you know, the officers asked for Lake's license. You know, he's attempting to pay for a stolen item. Why is he doing that?
Right.
So obviously they're going to question him. He gives them a driver's license, which has the name Robin Stapley on it. But the photo on the driver's license really doesn't look like Leonard Lake at all. And Robin Stapley turns out to be a San Diego man that was reported missing by his family several weeks earlier. The police then search Lake's vehicle. They find a gun that's equipped with a silencer in the trunk. And just based off that, they arrest him.
They got him in custody now.
He gave him a false identification.
Right.
The license plate also on Lake's vehicle is registered to Lake, but the vehicle itself is registered to somebody completely different, a man named Paul Cosner. And Paul Cosner had disappeared in November of 1984. So all this is not...
Nothing's gelling.
Adding up. He's given them two things, or, you know, he's in possession of two things that match people that have gone missing.
Right. So he gave a name that's not matching up. They've got the car
is not matching
not
up.
Matching, and then they got a license plate that's another name, which happens to be his actual name.
Right.
So,
but they use the registration, which is his. That was the one thing that was his. Yeah. So they do a thing. You know, while they've got Lake, they do a fingerprint search. They identify him as Leonard Lake. He tells them, he admits who he is. And, you know, they're trying to figure things out. All of a sudden, they notice that he's foaming at the mouth. And they rush him to the hospital. Basically, what happened was he had sewn some cyanide pills into his clothing to use in the event such as this that he was caught.
That's crazy.
And he was able to dig those cyanide pills out of his shirt or whatever sewn in little fake pocket. And he swallowed the cyanide pills. He actually made it 4 days.
He
dies, but it takes 4 days. And I bet you that was an agonizing 4 days.
Well, good.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially after you hear what's coming up.
Right.
But, all right, so yeah, and I read on different occasions that the cyanide was sewed in his shirt. I read that it was in his secret compartment on his belt. You know, so there was all kind of stories out there where the cyanide actually came from. Bottom line is, he had cyanide.
He did.
He took it. And, of course, if you listen to our podcast last week, we know what cyanide can do. So, like with Donald Harvey.
Yeah, he used it to kill quite a few people.
Yeah.
And you know, actually, when you say that, like a belt would make much more sense. Because a shirt, unless he's wearing the same damn shirt every day, is he sewing
it every day?
In every day?
Or he's not washing them?
I don't know. But either way, however he did it.
He took some cyanide.
He had the cyanide with him. And so at this point, the information that they do have about him personally, they got the fake information, but they have some real information. And that leads them to the property in Willsieville. And when they get there, they find trucks and cars and things that belong to a bunch of different people
mm-hmm.
that are ultimately going to turn out to be victims of Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. They find his cabin, and behind the cabin, they find the dungeon. So the police are searching the different structures there on Leonard Lake's rented property. And I did want to talk a little bit about that. You know, there was a main room that was like a 20 by 12 workshop area, had a bunch of hand tools and power tools and things. They noticed pretty quickly that a lot of the tools were found to be encrusted with, dried brownish substance, which would appear to be blood.
Blood, yeah.
And, you know, attached to the bench was a broken vise. And this part was really interesting. So they're inspecting this room, this one room, and the detectives are looking at the dimensions of the room, and they discover that it was smaller. It was a lot smaller than it seemed when they looked at it from the outside. And they deduce from that fact that there must be some type of hidden room inside. And they do find it. And it's basically like a plywood tool rack is instead really a door that's leading to this smaller room. Inside this room, there's a double bed, a side table, books, and a reading lamp. And on one wall, there's a wooden plaque with the words Operation Miranda. At first, they really were not sure what that was, but they learned sometime later that was derived from a book called The Collector by this man named John Fowles. And they do find the book on the bookshelf. Basically, the book is about this story of a butterfly collector who kidnaps a beautiful woman and keeps her locked in his cellar, and where the woman eventually dies. But that's not all that police would find.
Okay.
Secret-wise. So he had built some elaborate stuff in this compound, bunker, dungeon, these different buildings. So they find a secret door behind a bookcase that leads into another room.
Oh.
Another secret room.
More surprises.
Yeah. And this one was very small. The room was described as only being 3 foot, 3 inches wide.
Okay.
By 7.5 feet long.
It's a long, narrow hallway.
I mean, 3 foot is, yeah. I mean.
That's a narrow hallway.
That's a very narrow little room with a 6-foot ceiling.
Well, Okay.
So
that's strange.
It is just weird dimensions. So, but inside here, they find a narrow bed, which would have had to have been very narrow.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't even know how.
2 foot wide, maybe?
I don't even know how it would have had to have been custom made.
Yeah. Or like a cot.
Right. They find a chemical toilet, air freshener, and a water container. Holes had been drilled into the wall for ventilation, but there was some type of material on them to keep the light from coming in. So the air's coming in, but they got it
masked to keep light, because I guess he wanted them dark and dungy, like,
and probably sound. So he's got some kind of baffling or material,
right,
to keep the light and the sound, but somehow still allow the air.
It's creepy
to get in. Yeah, the guy exudes creepiness. So they're examining both these rooms, and they quickly find out that the window is a two-way glass.
Okay.
Mirror type situation. And they discover that there's a button that when you push the button, it allows the occupants of the first room, the bigger room,
right,
to hear any sounds from within this smaller room. And basically what they say is this was like a hostage cell. This is where people were kept.
Right.
And they, you know, they couldn't get out. They couldn't do anything. You know, very creepy.
Yeah.
To think about, and think about the planning that Leonard Lake had to have gone through.
Absolutely. To put that to
think about this in his head.
To get the layout that he wanted.
Right. And go back to what you talked about. And I think you mentioned he had neighbors help build some of this.
Right.
I'm assuming maybe he did this part on his own.
I'm hoping.
If not, what kind of neighbors would not question this as, yeah, what you building here?
Right.
Some kind of crazy dungeon?
I think I would have said something to somebody.
So, I mean, very, very crazy. But I think we got to jump forward, because they're searching this compound for a number of days. And it's really, by what I read, not till like the fourth or fifth day, I can't remember, that the first bodies are found. And they find, at this point, you know, skeletal remains of a few people that are basically complete, but it looked like they'd been sawed into sections and burned.
Explains why they needed the vise.
Probably.
Another vise, since the other one was broken.
In all, it was said that it was about 40 pounds of burned and smashed human bone fragments.
Wow.
That ultimately they found, and they matched it up to they could match it somehow to a minimum of 11 bodies.
That's.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to play this clip, 'cause I think it's kind of chilling.
What you have here, is, two individuals. And it appears that what they are doing is they are dropping this person into a fire. We just don't want to believe that these two men were capable of taking living human beings and placing them into a fire, because we know from the fourth picture that they were awake because they were able to speak when they were placed in the fire.
Wow.
So that's not good.
No. Talking about torture.
Right. So, you know, at first I had thought they killed them, chopped them up, and burned them, which is bad. But now they're talking about, they have evidence that they're burned, you know, they had burned some of these people alive, which is very crazy.
How do people not hear that? I mean, I know they're on a couple acres, but still.
Yeah, you would think.
You would think that you could hear the screams.
That's, yeah. There's something very ironic that happens. It's basically that same day that they start to find all these skeletons. At 8 p.m. on that day is when the doctors at the hospital turn off Leonard Lake's life support. And he basically dies within seconds, right? So we said he lasted, you know, 4 days or so. So it's like on this fourth or fifth day that they've been searching his house, that they find everything. And it just so happens that it's the same day that that they turn off his life support and he dies.
Too bad he wasn't tortured a little bit longer.
Yeah, no kidding. So later Gibbs, I mean, you know, we know, I think we mentioned it, or maybe it was you and I talking about it, but they find a lot of stuff, right?
Right.
At his place. They find a sealed 5-gallon bucket, and it contained a checkbook in the name of Robin Scott Stapley. They find jewelry, credit cards, driver's licenses, wallets. And probably the most important thing that they find are two separate videotapes.
Okay.
Now, we've already played snippets,
right,
of some of this. The videotapes had no labels, and the first two. And then they find a third, which is marked M Ladies, Kathy/Brenda. And the first two, so police look at the first two, and it basically shows Leonard Lake and Cricket, if you remember Cricket, that was his second wife,
right,
at a Thanksgiving dinner. That was the first one, I think. The second, Lake had been filmed discussing his greatest fantasy, kidnapping a woman and enslaving her. That's what we
kind of heard that in the beginning.
That's what we played up front. And it's this third one, though, this M Ladies tape, and that's what it becomes known as, M Ladies for Operation Miranda. That's why we talked about that, to bring it full circle. This one by far is the most disturbing, and it shows a young woman identified only as Kathy. She is chained to a chair and basically forced to perform a striptease while being taunted by both Lake and Ng. In another part of the video, you can clearly see Ng on the bed with Kathy while Lake is taking photographs.
Yeah.
So let's listen. Now, I do want to, you know, say this is disturbing, but this is not, like we talked about before, I kind of didn't put the most disturbing tape possible.
Right.
But let's listen to this.
If you go along with this, cooperate with us, we'll be as nice as we can to you within the limits of keeping you prison. If you don't go along with this, we'll probably take you into the bed, tie you down, rape you, shoot you, and bury you. Sorry, lady. Time's up. Make your choice.
But I don't want to be available.
Tell me what to hear. While you're here, we'll keep you busy. You'll wash for us, you'll clean for us, cook for us, you'll cook for us. That's your choice in a nutshell. It's not much of a choice. Unless you've got death wish.
No, I don't.
If it ever arises again, if there's any circumstance whatsoever that leads me to think that you're even attempting to make noise, it's immaterial as to whether I hear you or anyone else hears you, you'll be whipped very severely. And tell me you understand.
I understand.
I'm having a little war within myself between what I want to do and what we might call the decent thing to do. And for the moment, the decent thing to do is win, so rest. Okay, I just want you to know that I'm giving this stuff to you under protest. Not that you care.
You let us know?
Probably not.
But why are you doing this?
Because we hate you. Yes. Your baby is going to be taken away. Excuse me.
Why are you taken away?
There's a family down in Fresno that doesn't have a baby.
You're not taking my baby.
Except
the baby's
dead, right?
I think they got one now. That's my baby.
Your baby is sound asleep, like a rock. We don't like you. Would I like you to put it in writing?
If done, just stick it whatever we tell you.
Your way.
Don't cut me off.
Nothing is yours now. You're totally ours.
Play it so hard. You're sick.
Suffer.
I'm going to pass out of this one light or something.
Well, you can pass out, but we won't wake you up. Brenda, I have a lot of animosity against you, and I would just as soon start you out with a nice firm whipping right now to make you believe how serious we are.
You know, you hear a lot there, and there's a lot of that is cobbled together, and it's to keep some of the worst parts out of there, obviously, but what you hear is pretty bad. One of the women that you hear on there, she was identified as Kathleen Allen, 18 years old, she was apparently a clerk at a supermarket at a little town there close to the cabin, I think.
Right.
And by all accounts, she was lured up to the site by Lake, who apparently told her, I don't know if he called her while she was working at the this little convenience store, supermarket type place, and told her that her boyfriend had been shot. And police were later able to put it together that Kathy Allen's boyfriend, who was a man named Michael Sean Carroll, had been in cell in Leavenworth.
Yeah, they were cell buddies, right?
Yeah. So was it Ng that knew, probably had seen pictures of her, and that's what, you know, led them to pick her out. What you hear most of on the tape is a young woman named Brenda, and she's the one that you hear talking about begging for her baby. And you can hear Lake tell her, "Your baby is sound asleep like a rock." Eventually, you know, you don't hear it all, but they're just laying into her. They're taunting her and they're threatening to kill the baby.
Right.
Eventually Brenda agrees to cooperate. She's trying to save the life of her baby. And if you hear the whole tape, you know, at one point you can hear her taking a shower with both Lake and Ng at the same time. But again, I
very disturbing, though.
It is very disturbing. Well, and what's very disturbing is that they kill that baby.
The husband, the baby. I know they kill the baby.
I think that
Lonnie Jr.
Yes, you're right.
And then Lonnie Sr., the father.
And you know what? What's crazy about this one is that Brenda was like, you know, she was like their next door neighbor.
Yeah, they just adjacent from the cabin, so. I mean, that's where the family lived. So, I mean, here they think that it's just a normal, you know, guy. No, I don't want to say normal, not normal about him, but, you know, here, this guy moves in. And I don't believe he goes by Leonard Lake. I believe he's using, you know, Gunner's identity still.
I think so. And
yeah.
I think it's important that you mentioned that, right? We said he killed his friend Charles Gunner because he wanted his ID. Because keep in mind, right, he's still on the lam, I guess we'll call it. He's still wanted back from, what was it, from the weapons
charge.
The weapons charge.
Right.
Where he skipped out on the $6,000 bail. So I think that's what prompted all of that. You know, I don't know why he killed his brother. What I read was he wanted money. But I think he killed Gunner especially for his ID.
Yeah.
To use to stay hidden. Yeah, you're right. So, unfortunately, you know, all these people end up becoming victims, but Brenda's killed, Lonnie, and then Lonnie Jr. was the baby. So they're all killed.
So how did they tape all this stuff? Where did they get all this equipment from?
Well, yeah, I think that's important because that leads us to the Dubs family. I think that's where you're going.
I am.
Right?
Yeah.
So right now, as they're doing the search, I think they've got the bodies of seven men, three women, two baby boys, and they're up to about 45 pounds of bone fragments.
Yeah,
recovered at this point, along with what we talked about was just tons, numerous amounts of different property that belonged to these people. Where the Dubs family comes in. So, I think where you're heading is, you know, how did Leonard Lake get this equipment, which I think we said in the beginning, for that time period, if you look at the videos, it was, I don't know if it was professional, but it had to have been pretty high-end
for that time
video equipment. Ultimately, the police find the body of the Dubs, three members of the Dubs family, Harvey, Deborah, and Sean. They figure out that the three people from the Dubs family had been abducted and killed after Charles Ng and Leonard Lake had gone to their house because Harvey Dubs had advertised some audio and video equipment for sale. And so I don't know if that is the equipment that he used or he already had that, but it would make sense. It would correlate maybe.
Well, yeah, because eventually the police get the serial numbers off the video equipment and they do trace it back to Dubs. So that's kind of how they put it all together.
I wasn't sure if that was positively what they used to make the M tapes.
I mean, there's nothing that really says this is what was used, but I'm guessing that's the, because he's a, you know, Dubs is a professional. Well, they don't really say, but he's a photographer.
Yeah.
That's how he makes his living. So I'm guessing that's why we know it's probably that equipment.
Yeah. But either way, that's how they know that they killed the Dubs, is because they were able to connect serial numbers.
So you keep trying to get in shape and it keeps not working. I'm Lacey Green, a super trainer with Body. That's BODI.com. And I've got a story you have to hear. I have a client who came to me because she was really frustrated that every gym or trainer she tried made her feel bad because she was a beginner. She had tried it all and she just felt humiliated. And that's when we started working together and I took her through my 3-week program called For Beginners Only. Once she realized that she wasn't the problem and that she just needed the right program, she started to get results. And now she's completely unstoppable and feeling so strong and confident. And I can do the same for you. On the Body app, subscribers lose 5 to 10 pounds consistently in their first month. And I bet you will too. In fact, CNN underscore just named Body best fitness app. And right now, Body has a special introductory offer. The next 500 new users who sign up for a year of Body save 72%. That's just 33 cents a day. All you have to do is go to body.com. That's BODI.com.
If you're like me and refuse to let go of your skinny jeans, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarins Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine. Rooted in nature and innovated with science, Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. While Multi-Active Cream can't bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. Go to clarins.com/truecrime and get Multi-Active Day and Night Cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME.
Now, there's one more victim that I want to talk about, and it's kind of out of sequence, but there was this guy named Don Gilletti, and I read something about him and I wanted to include it. We probably mentioned this back, but you know, the FBI, when they're involved, they estimate that the kidnapping and killing spree of Leonard Lake and Charles Ng begins about within a month of their getting back together, right? We covered that, their reunion where Ng gets out of prison.
Right.
So they don't waste a lot of time, because I think Leonard Lake had all this planned out.
Sure.
He had the bunker. I don't know if he was waiting on Ng to start everything in motion because he felt like he needed another person.
Right.
But either way, it starts in earnest within a month or so of Ng and him getting, you know, back together. If we go back in July of 1984, there was this man named Donald Gilletti. He was a San Francisco disc jockey, and his roommate was named Richard Carraza, and they were both shot by an Asian man who had broken into their apartment and robbed them. Now, Gilletti died of the gunshot wound. But Richard Carraza, he survived, and he would later identify Charles Ng as his attacker. What is very significant about this is that the pistol used to kill Gilletti and wound Carraza would ultimately be found at the Wilsonville site.
Okay.
So that's how they connect
all of
this.
That's how they tie it all in together.
Right. So we know Leonard killed a couple people. But Ng also did some work on his own
Right. Yeah. I mean, he did some solo acts there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well, they both were bad individuals by themselves, and to put them together, they were just pure terror. You know, and I think that's why, you know, there were some accounts. You know, we talk about Brenda O'Connor. You know, she was in part of that tape, and where she's pleading for them not to do anything to her infant son. But you know, when she lived adjacent from what she thought was, you know, Charles Gunner, which was AKA Lake, right? You know, she actually made mention to a couple friends that she was pretty sure that she thought she saw him bury a woman, you know, out in the woods. She never said anything to the police. Her husband didn't believe her, thought, you know, what are you talking about? But they were a little concerned, and that's when they invited Robin Stampley to live with them, because he was, I remember the Guardian Angels back then, pretty big group of individuals that were trying to protect people on the streets, the subways, sure. Subways and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I remember that. So she gets this Robin Stampley, you know, to share some quarters with them, and he offers, you know, to do this for free, if, you know, by living there with them without any rent and things like that. You know, we know that he shows up missing, and
they find all a bunch of personal effects, which we mentioned. So,
right.
I don't know if they were able to tie, you know, because some of these bodies were so badly.
Right. Yeah. There was no way to determine how they were, you know, killed.
I don't know if they ended up being able to do DNA on them. I'm not sure what happened. You know, we know Leonard Lake's dead, but we've got to talk about Charles Ng, because while the police are, you know, while they detained Lake and they're searching the cab and they're finding all this stuff, Ng takes off.
Yep.
And
he's good at fleeing.
Yeah. He takes off, and because obviously he knows what's going to happen. They're after him. He apparently at one point was seen boarding an American Airlines flight to Chicago. He stayed there for a few days. Then he met up with some unidentified friend. I guess they never were able to figure out exactly who it was, but they traveled to Detroit. And, you know, back then, I don't know if you've ever been to Detroit.
Oh yeah.
But you know, you can cross. And back then you just walked on over with no paperwork or anything.
Right.
But you can cross into Windsor.
Really easy.
And you know,
yeah,
you could throw a baseball basically to Windsor, Canada. So that's where he crosses. It's not long till his nasty habit, what's the word? His obsession rears its head again.
Right.
And that's shoplifting.
Yeah.
I mean, it does him in.
Yeah. Something small like that.
Yeah. I don't know what the,
was that around July 6th of 85?
That's what I got.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he was arrested in Calgary, Alberta.
Yeah.
And apparently had shot a security guard while resisting arrest for shoplifting. So, I mean, yeah, maybe he didn't have any money, but either that or he just really enjoyed shoplifting.
Yeah. It seemed to be a trend for him.
Yeah. So he was charged. So he's in Canada and he's charged and convicted of the shoplifting assault. And I guess he had a concealed firearm. And he's actually sentenced to 4.5 years in prison in Canada.
Right. So, you know, we know he's in prison. He does his four and a half years, right? But before they release him, you know, a Canadian judge ruled that, you know, he should be extradited to the United States for trial for 19 of the 25 charges filed against him in California. But then this is where we start getting into the good old court systems and things like that, right? So he appeals the decision.
Dozens of appeals.
A dozen appeals, and they get rejected, and they go back and forth, and all kind of legal maneuvers are played out to keep him from being extradited back to the United States. And I think that goes all the way up to 1991.
It does, but let me ask you why. Why would Canada have a problem? And I'm guessing I just now figured out the answer.
Well, probably because of the death penalty. Yeah.
That's usually why
That's normally why most of them countries don't, right?
Or other countries have an issue with extraditing people back to the United States is because, and Canada, you know, is something else. And I know we have a lot of Canadian listeners, and I hope that we'll do some Canadian cases. They really don't put sentences the way that we do here in the United States on certain crimes.
Right.
Right. So people that are convicted of murder, you know, they're able to get out much, much quicker than people here are in the United States.
Right.
So I guess that's why they have an issue with, and probably had an issue with this extradition, is because they don't have the death penalty and they don't believe in it. And so they're fighting it.
But eventually we get him over here. But again, he's pretty good. He's a master at manipulating the system, right? You know, and he's figured out how to work the legal system in California pretty good. And he drags it out, you know, on all counts about another 7 years, I believe.
Yeah. And you know, what's crazy is I read that eventually, once they do get into the criminal proceedings, that this is the most costly trial in U.S. history, even costing more than the O.J. Simpson case.
Really?
Which is amazing to me.
Right.
Because they're not even trying Lake. He's killed himself.
Right, right.
They're only trying Ng.
And they have video. They have weapons.
Oh, yeah.
With his prints on it.
Yeah, and I don't know what they're using to... I don't know if they're using all the money that was spent over the years doing the appeals and all of that as well. But I did read that where they said the most costly criminal proceedings in U.S. history.
And it didn't help that some of the evidence was destroyed. So that didn't help the prosecutor out, right? I mean, you have this evidence that's supposed to be presented, and it was strong evidence, and for whatever reason, it got destroyed. So again, that just helped continue his trial on. And like
you said, he was kind of masterful at prolonging it.
Right.
I mean, at one point, you know, he made formal complaints on all kinds of different things, that he was being treated poorly, that the food was bad.
Oh, that he had the wrong prescription in his glasses, that he couldn't see, that he needed to get the right prescription, right. So we need to postpone again.
That he couldn't move forward with the trial because apparently he had to take medication for motion sickness because it was a 50-mile trip to the courthouse, and it made him drowsy. And there was actually audio that where he was kind of slurring his words, and they were asking him about it, and he tried to say he was tired.
Right.
I mean, the guy, you know, he would just do whatever he had to do, right? And, you know, at one point he fired his attorneys, and I think he did that a couple of different times.
Oh, yeah. He's just racking up more money for the state, right?
He filed a million-dollar malpractice suit against his attorneys for incompetence. You know, at one point, he even filed a motion to represent himself, which is about the dumbest thing you can do. Yeah,
it's never good to go pro se.
No. But, you know, and that's about the only smart thing he did, is he withdrew that at some point. So, I think we have to get to the trial because, like you said, they've got a ton of evidence on him.
Yeah. And we got about $20 million invested at that time, right? It was right. A lot of money, you know.
They're moving forward, you know, Calaveras County. He's indicted on 12 counts. Now, how they came up with that, I'm not 100% sure because, but again, right, they're only trying Charles Ng. So Lake and Ng together killed anywhere from... What'd you have, Mike? I had, could have been 25. It could have been way higher.
Yeah, it varied.
You know, because there was no, when you're talking about trying to measure pounds of bone and things like that.
Yeah, and you can't, you know, they weren't able to do the DNA to determine what each one was.
Right. So I'm assuming that what they had was 12 solid counts against Ng. Right. Their most 12, solid 12 that they could,
right.
They thought they could convict him. But even then, there's all kinds of pretrial motions, stalling tactics. You know, he tried to sue the state and, it's just all kinds of crazy stuff. And that delayed the trial, I think, a whole nother year because he went through 10 attorneys.
Yeah.
Between the time the trial started and
conviction.
Until the trial actually concluded, right?
Right.
I want to play this tape because we haven't heard from Ng yet. And I want you to hear this tape of what Ng has to say about the infamous M tape.
This tape cannot be taken lock, stock, and barrel the way it is. This is like a three scenes of it. You know, first scene is Lennon Nick with Kathy Allen with me. The second scene was a massage scene. Third scene was Lennon Nick talking to Kathy Allen when I'm not in the property at all. The fourth scene is Brenda O'Connor scene with Lennon Nick, me. That's basically the totality of the tape. Because the tape only lasts, the segment that I was involved in only lasts at the most 20 minutes. And the prosecution tried to tell the jury that this 20 minutes, this is the real Charles Ng.
Basically, he's trying to say that even though he's on the tape, he didn't do anything.
Right.
You really can't prove by just the tape that I did this, this, and this. So, but, you know, so let's jump forward to October 1998. Right. This is when we get going. It's 13 years of delays and all kinds of stall tactics. This is when the trial of Charles Ng begins. It was a big media circus. I mean, this was a big deal back then. It was a big case and it was covered. Then you have Charlene Hanaka, who's the prosecutor. And I want to play, I just think from what I heard, she did a really good job. I want to play a tape for you of her.
What the evidence in this case is going to show is that this defendant with Leonard Lake planned and committed the 12 charged murders in this case. This is a chart which lists the 12 counts. The evidence will show that between a time frame from July 1984 until 1985, these 12 victims disappeared from the face of the earth. And this trial will tell you the story of what happened to them. We're going to play for you two segments from that videotape as a means of demonstrating the evidence and in helping you understand. Were you present at the extradition hearing when Mr. LaBerge testified that you told him that you could hear on the video the sounds of handcuffs clicking?
I remember that statement he made. No, not on the tape.
So you just decided on your own to cut her clothes off, right?
Yes.
You told Leonard at one point that the piece was on the table, right?
Yeah, I remember saying something like that.
What did you mean by the piece?
Oh, just wanted to let him know the gun was on the table in case Kathy might grab the gun and shoot him with it.
Well, now, she's handcuffed, right?
Yes.
And she's got leg manacles on?
Yes, I believe so.
And there are two of you and one of her, right?
Yes.
And the reason you told Leonard that the gun was on the table is because you were afraid Kathy might pick it up and shoot him?
Something like that.
It's never Ng's fault. He always lays the blame on someone else. He was not under the control of Leonard Lake. He was his own person. He was making his own independent choices and doing the things he wanted to do.
So I don't know about you, Gib, but I'm convinced. I mean, although that soundbite is weird, it almost sounds like it's part of a bad soap opera.
Right.
But like, I liked her voice. I don't know. There's something about her that drew me in. He sounds like a wackadoodle.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about his voice that, yeah. I mean, we know he was
Neither one was right. Neither one of those guys were right.
I mean, they're not right.
They're part of the most brutal, sadistic murders of all time.
Yeah. But there was something about his voice that just was creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is creepy.
Anyway, they go through the trial. You know, they showed the videos. It clearly showed that Ng was part of the torture and abuse of Kathy Allen and Brenda O'Connor. I mean, they had these M tapes like we talked about. Now, one thing we haven't talked about is Lake kept diaries. I don't know if you said that or not. You might have.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Did we talk about that?
Yeah, we brushed on it quickly.
So she had tried to submit Leonard Lake's diaries as evidence, but the judge refused to admit them because he said that it bore no evidence on the case. I guess that was because it was Lake's and didn't technically incriminate Ng. But so we heard from the prosecutor. The defense, obviously, as they have to, tried to make a defense.
Right.
Let's hear from them.
No matter how many different ways they show it to you and excerpts from it, there's one thing you never see. Anybody being murdered. And you don't see Charles Ng involved in anybody's murder. No matter how many times you see him cut the clothes off Brenda O'Connor. And as offensive as that is, and I grant you it's offensive, but it ain't murder. It just isn't.
You know, and some of these, you know, and that was William Kelly. And I have to imagine he had his hands full.
Yeah.
Trying to mount a defense for Charles Ng. Now, one thing I do want to talk about is Cricket. Because we kind of talked about her early on. She implicated Charles Ng. And it's...
Wife number two.
She had divorced Lake, I believe, right before...
Yeah, before all this...
Everything started.
Yeah.
But she had some knowledge of things that happened. And there was some talk about, you know, she was a school teacher. And like I said, I touched on, there was some talk about her being more of a participant in some of these things that went on later, even though they were divorced at the time.
Right.
You said they had remained friendly. And so she was given immunity for, you know, her testimony against Ng. Now, there's only one reason you'd need to get immunity, and that's probably because
you have knowledge and you probably participated in the knowledge that you have to share about certain events.
And as we heard, she was on some of these tapes talking
about
young girls.
Right. And,
but at one part in the trial, Charles Ng tries to cause a mistrial, and he does it by somehow getting the phone number of one of the jurors and somehow contacting her, calling her home from the jail.
That's creepy.
And I have no idea how he did it, but I have the juror talking about it.
After I found out that it was in fact Charles Ng that had called me and had been able to reach out from his cell and get into my house. And it's scary. He doesn't belong here. I couldn't just leave it at court anymore. It was at home with me now. And I resent that.
Well, you know, I think maybe he had help. Because remember, he came from a very affluent family from Hong Kong.
That's right.
And they were there for the trials, right? They came in, they talked to the police and stuff. So maybe they had a hand in trying to help this whole trial out, you know, by participating in that. Don't know, but...
Could have been.
I mean...
It's a theory.
It's definitely a strong theory on my part.
I mean, he had to have help from somebody.
Right.
Either inside the prison or outside or, you know, something like that. But... You know, how crazy would that be? You're a juror in one of the biggest cases in California history. And this madman, Charles Ng, calls you one night at your home while the trial is going on. I'm really surprised that it didn't cause a mistrial.
Right. Well, that's what they were hoping for.
Yeah, that's what he was hoping for, right, for sure. But I'm surprised it didn't, because, you know, something like that could easily do it. So we jump forward to February 99. The trial has lasted 8 months. You know, Ng is ultimately convicted of 11 of the 12 homicides, 6 men, 3 women, 2 male infants, and jurors could not decide on the 12th charge. So they deadlocked on that, but he was convicted on 11 of the 12. And like we said, Charles Ng's prosecution cost approximately $20 million. And at the time, it was the most expensive trial in the state's history. I don't know where it ranks today, but
well, $20 million in today's dollars. I don't know what that would be.
Yeah. And I don't know if they do that by $55 million. You know, that's like comparing Star Wars to Avatar. I don't know if they do that in
today's dollars or
adjusted,
right,
for inflation,
sure,
dollars or whatever you call it. So the judge followed the jury's recommendation and imposed a sentence of death, but he didn't have to. He had the option of sentencing Ng to life imprisonment, but that's number one. That's probably how much what he thought about this gruesome,
sure,
spree. It's not really a spree, but you know what I mean.
Brutal, sadistic stuff, man.
And also, you know, I got to commend the judge for following the jury's recommendation.
Which, you know, and going back, this is California. And typically in California, you know, they don't really try to push the death penalty. So
let's listen to the verdict. Got that?
Charles Chittad Ng, it is the judgment and sentence of this court that you shall be punished by death. Said penalty to be inflicted within the walls of the California State Prison in San Quentin, California.
I don't want to be in this car road. You fucking give me a show trial, you fucking judge.
So I wanted to play that because I don't know if you could hear it at the end, but you know, he basically starts dropping F-bombs on the judge.
Right.
And, you know, starts outburst. And we didn't talk about this, but this was kind of a side thing. He was so crazy during this trial that I read they had to fit him with some type of, it was almost like a, I don't know if it was a belt or a vest, but it was like a cattle prod, and the bailiff had a button.
Oh, so they could keep him under control.
And every time that he got too crazy, they could zap him.
Wow.
I mean, that's how crazy this guy was during the trial.
Well,
and how disruptive.
Yeah. I think everybody saw his true colors during the trial and, of course, there towards the conviction.
Right. So, right now, as far as I know, he's on death row at San Quentin State Prison. I don't know if or when he'll ever be executed. Hell, you know, Charles Manson's still on there, and he's about ready to die. He's in such poor health.
Yeah, we know it takes could be 30 years or so.
Right. So, Gibby, you got anything else for Leonard Lake and Charles Ng?
No.
Other than the fact that
maybe I'll get my appetite back, you know, in a few days, but
yeah, other than the fact that they were two very, very sick individuals.
Yeah. Yeah, very sick.
All right, everybody. That's it for us. As always, stay safe and keep your own time ticking. We'll be right back.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.